Agenda paper 4. Heading over to Satanique. And before we do, Young Sue, can you hear us?
Yes.
Excellent. doing well already. Okay, Satanique.
Thank you, Sue. So we will now move on to agenda paper 4. At its June 2017 meeting, the committee discussed how an entity accounts for the acquisition of a group of assets in particular circumstances. The committee concluded that a reasonable reading of the requirements in paragraph 2b of IFRS 3 on the acquisition of group of assets results in one of the two approaches outlined in the tentative agenda decision. The committee also tentatively decided not to add the matter to its agenda because it had not obtained evidence that the outcomes of applying the two approaches would be expected to have a material effect on the amount that entities report. We received 10 comment letters on this tentative agenda decision, which are reproduced in Appendix C of the paper, 7 of which disagree and suggest adding the standard setting project. The comments received did not, in our view, provide information that would suggest the committee should reconsider its conclusion. Our analysis of the example provided by Mazars illustrates that the difference between two approaches could be material if the investment property acquired is measured at cost, using the cost model in IAS 40, and depending on the particular assets and liabilities acquired. However, the research results show that in the large majority of cases, we would expect entities that might be affected to use the fair value model in IAS 40. On the basis of our analysis, we recommend finalizing the agenda decision, subject to the changes mentioned in paragraph 66 of the staff paper. I would now like to ask if you agree with our recommendation, and if yes, whether you agree with the wording for the agenda decision outlined in Appendix A.
Okay. Who wants to start? I guess the staff have made, appropriately, I think, quite a big deal in the paper about whether or not that there's evidence of an actual sort of practical effect of the differences of reading that are set out in the paper, because we are trying to be quite disciplined as an organisation generally to ensure that there's enough potential benefit from standard setting to justify the cost to the system, not just us, but to the system overall. So, and I think we were challenged a bit with not really getting much evidence in the letters, and the staff, I think, actually took the extra step of even reaching out to people who wrote to us asking for evidence and still didn't have much luck. So just interesting to reflect on, and perhaps if you're talking to people writing comment letters, I think it's good to really know, to reinforce with them that we're going to be looking for evidence more and more, I think, to make sure that it makes sense for us to do standard setting when people want us to do that. with that lead in, Bonnie.
I'll wade in.
Yeah.
There were maybe a couple of things that I was troubled by. One is, in the staff analysis, one of the examples came up with a result whereby you essentially have a gain on cash, which I find nonsensical, frankly. Cash to me is cash. So any kind of conclusion whereby cash is stated at less than its actual value because it's a liquid instrument, I don't think makes any sense. I think the second thing that I was troubled by is just the number of comment letters and the number of comment letters who disagreed with our proposal not to add it to our agenda, and also the number of comment letters that indicated their expectation is that this issue will become more widespread with the change in the definition of a business in relation to business combination. So I do not agree with the staff conclusion. I think we should do something more. So I'll kick it off with that.
Okay. I'm Young Sue.
Oh, yes. I should say that I agree with the staff analysis, but I don't agree with the staff conclusion. I understand that both methods have both approaches have problems, but I think that approach 2 has more problems than approach 1. because approach two cannot be applied to some situations. In the prior meeting, the staff gave us an example where a negative number, negative amount, is assigned or allocated to some of the assets in a group. For a while, I just thought about this issue a little bit more, and I thought of more extreme situation. And a situation that I thought about was the case where there is only financial assets in a group. So, for example, a company acquires a group of assets at $150, but you know the fair value. I mean, the total of the individual fair value of the assets in the group is $200, and in the group, the only assets are the financial assets. In that case, there could be a difference of $50, and I don't know how I can account for that $50 of difference when only the group of assets consists of financial assets. The other way around is also a trouble. What if a company pays $200 for a group of assets that consists of only financial assets? So what I'm trying to say is that both approaches have problems, but approach number two has bigger problems. By bigger problem, what I meant is that there are some situations where you cannot apply that approach number two. And also staff says that, as also Sue, you mentioned that, you know, there is not much difference between those two approaches in result. FDA, the two approaches does not produce much difference at all, then I think what we have to do is to allow only the method that can be applied in all situations. So what I'm trying to say is that I prefer approach number one to approach number two.
Okay. Thank you. Although if we did want to restrict it to one approach, I'm not sure, based on the analysis, as I understand it, we could do that in the absence of standard setting. So just something to think about. Bruce?
Thanks, Sue. I don't like the fact that we've got an agenda decision that accepts that we get a different answer. People have asked us a question saying, should we do view A or view B or one and two? And we're just kind of going back and saying, well, yes, there is a difference. You can get either one. The challenge I've got with where we've got to, and I accept where the staff have gone, I accept the analysis and agree with it, but the challenge I've got is we've clearly got a situation where we know that there's diversity. This is not a new thing. We've known this for a while. It's now come to us. I think we also are very much aware that there's an amendment that's going to be issued on the definition of business, which is going to highlight this further. So we know it's an issue. We know that it's going to be more thrust into the spotlight when it comes out. And when we put this out for comments, 7 of the 10 people who wrote back said we need to do standard setting. I just feel that when you stack all of those cards up against us, to turn around and say, well, we're just going to go back with an agenda session and says, well, let's just stick with the status quo of doing one and two, I don't think is the right answer. Personally, I think if you looked at the two views, yes. Do I like either of them? No, not really. I'd like to rewrite the guidance to be a bit more probably something in between them. But I think that that's what I think the staff need to look at. Do we think this is the right answer? Do we think that there's a way that we could go and say actually the right answer should be X? That's what we're going to go with. So my view would be I think we need to do stand sitting in this. I'm not convinced that we've got the right answer.
So suppose I'd only say, Bruce, back at this stage, and then let's, obviously in terms of our view in the papers, I think you opened with saying, look, we know there's a problem, and I understand saying we know there's a problem, we're not going to do anything about it, is the point. I suppose all we're saying is, based on the information that we obtained, what we know for sure is we're saying there's two different ways to read this, at least based on what I've received as evidence and information. I can't say at the minute that I think that I have enough information to say it is a real problem in that we know there are, you know, X number or lots of transactions out there where you get to a significant enough difference that would actually, you know, affect decision making or actually make material differences. So I suppose that's kind of where we are. And so I picture sometimes as we stand up when we're speaking to people and when sometimes people are turning around to us and tell us, why are you doing this? You know, clearly this is potentially going to cost us. It costs us, if only, just in spending time writing comment letters to you. But if you're going to change, where's the evidence that says
you know, there's going to be real benefit in you starting to change the words around and potentially, you know, maybe spend time and money in changing around.
And I appreciate that. And I mean, I was very surprised when you said that the feedback was that the people haven't come back with it. I mean, from my experience, I already know two or three companies who are doing this differently. So, you know, and they've got different answers. So I'm saying I was surprised at that. I guess the only comment I would make is that you're right that maybe people haven't really thought through it and looked at it in detail. And unfortunately, I think part of that process is that I think the number of people who would pay attention and stand up to a tentative agenda decision and people who would stand up to an ED on this would be very, very different. I think if you went out there and said, we're going with view one tomorrow, we're going to get a lot of comment letters. So I know it's the wrong way around, but I've got a feeling that's what would happen. And as I say, I think with the amendment coming out, maybe it is a level to use this to be a little bit more proactive in knowing that this is going to become a big issue.
Over and above contacting everybody who has sent us a letter. Now, I'm going to go around the room and answer people with their Toblerones up, but I'm going to warn the board members that I might come back to you and ask from a board member's perspective what your thoughts are, particularly on the lack of evidence and how you might think about that if it ends up with the board sort of having a say, because that might be just something interesting for the committee to hear. And I'm warning you, if you don't want to, that's fine, but just so you can think about it. Sandy?
I guess, you know, as I read this and I hear people's comments and the discussion of the lack of evidence, it's probably because of the lack of disclosure of what's actually done, right? I look at this and say, if there's two options and you can come up with different results, the paper doesn't address what's actually required to be disclosed. And I didn't have a chance because I was traveling to go through and look again, but my guess is that you don't get a level of detail that you're actually necessary to make the adjustment to the accounting that you as a user of the financial statements would prefer to see. Or, you know, I look at some of these and say, really a $200,000 gain, I don't know economically what that actually represents. So in the absence of doing some standard setting, I guess my question is, what disclosure am I required to make? And, you know, part of why you may have no evidence is because you don't actually see the disclosures on it now. I don't know that you'll ever get a consistent result, but I also think that you know, defining a business and the accounting for it and defining assets and accounting for it is something that's an accounting convention, not necessarily something that users of the financial statements really see as all that different. So I looked at this and said, if we can't come up with standard setting, nobody's told me what kind of disclosures am I actually going to get to decide how I adjust the financial statements to the numbers that I like, because if it is meaning adjusting cash, I'm probably going to be with Bonnie and adjust that number. So just my thoughts from a user perspective on what are you actually going to see.
John?
I mean, I think there's a disconnect between the evidence of it making a difference and the identification of the circumstances in which it could make a difference. I think in paragraph 55, the circumstances are identified where it could give rise to a difference. I think those are situations that very well could arise in practice. And I'm concerned with an increase in the number of acquisitions of groups of assets with the amendments to the definition of a business. Some of these circumstances I expect will increase, and therefore you could end up with material differences. It seems without much evidence that it has caused a huge difference. Is that because we can't see it, because there isn't disclosure, or is that because it isn't there? I don't know that there's been enough research for us to conclude whether in practice there is an issue or not. So I'm sort of a bit reluctant to just leave it and not do anything with it because of that.
Do you have any suggestions of what else we could do to try and...
I mean, I think you'd have to do standard setting. I don't know that there's any... I mean, I argue this at previous meetings, I only read 2B one way, which was approach one. That's what I always thought it meant. But the committee's obviously decided it can be justifiably read in two different ways. I think in my view, we probably need to understand whether that is causing a difference, and if it is, we're probably obligated to do something about it or recommend something be done about it. I don't know if we know enough to say that it hasn't made a difference in practice based upon I know you've done some research and looking at reports, and it's not evident, but is that because of a lack of you know, disclosure or transparency of the accounting that's being followed for acquisitions of groups of assets. Because I can think of many types of transactions where it would make a big difference. the other thing in the paper, I suppose, there's also some discussion about, I'm concerned about, with talking about how the day one fair value issue on financial instruments is dealt with. Because it seems to me that if you apply approach one and you allocate the cost to come up with a transaction price for each of the assets, you don't automatically remeasure your financial instruments to fair value, because you have to apply the day one gain loss provisions of IFRS 9. So you may well not end up with your financial instruments at fair value under approach one, unless they were those for which you're entitled to recognise day one gains.
True. Bertrand?
I appreciate the others' comments on their wish for standard setting. At the same time, I admit that I concur with Patrina's observation on the fact that we could well live with those two ways of interpreting the paragraph interpreted in this paper. Provided that if it's material, it has a material effect, then it's disclosed, obviously. And I would be rather prudent if effectively the scope might increase in the future. I will just wait before doing any standard setting, that we wait to know exactly in which direction the scope will increase. What will be the increase in scope? So as long as we don't know yet, I wouldn't decide today for what might happen in the future. So I think it's probably more prudent to stick on the tentative agenda decision we decided earlier, and not to do anything else, even though I totally appreciate the fact that we might need to do something, but wait for what might happen in the future before deciding to any direction we might take.
Okay, thank you. Reinhard?
Thanks. This issue, we've talked a lot about this issue in Canada, given it was, as I think, evident that the Canadian Accounting Standards Board raised this issue. And I was interested in the comments by people who observe approach one being used in practice, because, at least in the Canadian context, we struggle mightily to avoid a day one gain or loss, and so people tend to use approach two. And often the industries that we deal with, oil and gas or mining, where it may be an acquisition of assets as opposed to a business, there's a range of values that you have for your non-financial assets, and you can get to an answer that makes sense. So I don't know whether we haven't observed material gain, day one gains or losses being recorded on these acquisitions, whether it's a lack of disclosure, or I would tend to think you would see that through the notes if it was material. But having said all that, I think, you know, I agree that conceptually either approach you can read either approach into the language, and so I think the agenda decision I would not disagree with. Personally, though, I think along the lines of what Bertrand said, I would suggest that this be put on the issues that the board monitors as part of the sweep on IFRS 3, and keep this in mind, because to the extent we have more asset acquisitions that occur in practice and this becomes an issue that becomes more prevalent in practice, then I think it would be important to address. And then just one small point, if we were to proceed with finalizing the agenda decision, one thing that I wasn't sure about on reflection reading the wording is in the second to last paragraph, the last sentence says, the committee observed that an entity applies its reading of the requirements consistently to all such acquisitions. I'm wondering whether we want it to be clearer in our view as to whether this is an accounting policy choice, or does it depend on the nature and extent or circumstance of the assets that you're acquiring?
Jim.
I agree with the staff analysis, and I also agree not to add this to a standard setting agenda. Why? Because, as many just mentioned, yeah, we do see the difficulties and differences in practice. it's more of a practical issue than this principle issue. We're dealing with hypothetical numbers. Why these group of assets end up with more than the single purchasing or the contract price? Nobody knows. Yeah, we just assume, okay, the total contract price or the package worth 2,000, and if we cut it into small pieces, will be 1,050 or something different. Why? That's because identifying the fair value of one asset, it doesn't matter if it's physical or financial, it's difficult enough. Everybody gets their own opinion and calculation and models. We're assigning a bunch of assets and trying to reconcile them into one contractual number. It's a practical difference, and it will always be there. It doesn't matter which way you want them to do. Even if we do the full fair value approach, everything is full fair value, you'll still see the difference. Why the bunch of assets or the package is more or less than the single contract amount. So even though we issue something, some wording or standard setting, it won't solve this problem at all. It will always come back. So I'm not saying that we don't see the differences. Yes, there are differences, but these differences are practical. This is due to the nature of the accountants, of the fact patterns, how they end up with the fair value or fair values of those things. It always be there. A standard setting won't help us that much, and plus it will cost us so many effort to figure out why it's these and why that. On top of that, we're not full fair value everything. Some assets are cost-based or amortized-based, some for fair value-based, some day one gain or loss realized, some not. So the value to redo or find or do a standard setting practice. That's my reason. So I say we stand this and we just let it go. It's not a principle issue, it's a practical issue.
Thanks, John. Tony?
So I guess I'm a bit like the staff, not seeing compelling evidence that there is something here that needs standard setting activity. I understand that for a particular subset of this type of transaction, you might end up with a different answer. That's different, I think, for example, to the issue we've got up next, where we initially came up with two answers, but that would perhaps make a difference in connection with every onerous contract. Here, it's only a subset of this particular set of circumstances that would result in a difference. I think a combination of what you need to disclose in accordance with IAS 8, using accounting policies, and IAS 1, material transactions should lead companies to provide enough information about the impact of the accounting policy that's been selected, if the impact is material. So I think that there is a mechanism for there to be enough information for people to understand it. And I think I'm inclined to agree with the staff that there isn't, at the moment, evidence that there is significant difference happening. If when the amendments to IFRS 3 become effective, it becomes clear that there are significant differences that are causing a problem, then maybe it's one to come back to. But I think for the time being, I was not uncomfortable with where the staff had got to. I think the only thing in it that does make me feel uncomfortable, but I'm not sure there's a solution, is the issue that Bonnie raised. And if I take a situation where there is simply a hard asset and a cash balance, the idea of getting a gain on cash feels really weird. I think that's where approach one leads you in that set of circumstances, but that feels really strange to me, getting a gain on a cash balance. But otherwise, I think I was comfortable with where the staff had got to.
Carl.
Thanks. Because of this kind of counterintuitive answers and results, and I'm not comfortable with an agenda decision. I would be supportive of some standard setting activity. It seems a rising interpretation here, possibly.
Okay, thanks, Carl. You're allowed on the stage? Yeah, you're allowed.
Sorry, I just add in my other, you know, topics at this stage into the conversation. So it's interesting, and where we started, I think, in the tentative agenda decision, and obviously the last discussion, was the arguments were all based around evidence, which they are still, and obviously a big part of the paper is talking about that and trying to isolate where, you know, what are the factors that, you know, when theoretically could there be a material difference, and have we any information to support, you know, how often or when that happens in practice. I just think in our thought process as well, and maybe, by the way, to the extent that that might be something to be added, is that in paragraph 60 to 62 in the paper, another kind of, I think, I suppose, factor that we try to put there to give you some picture at least is that as a starting point for us as staff, there is no easy, quick solution here. So I suppose just encountering what's the benefits of possible standards, saying what are the costs, what amount of effort might be, there is no clear, obvious answer. I think if we were to, the quick and easy, which would not cost too much time in terms of, you know, writing proposed changes to the words and thinking through it, would be just to do some very tiny tweak that might clarify effectively what's approach one, which is what we say. However, just based on this discussion today, never mind, I think, comment letters, I think, again, that would not be an easy, straightforward thing to just propose and think that our stakeholders might accept, because of just how many people would come up with scenarios where they consider that to produce counterintuitive outcomes. And then they would say, if you're going to spend time opening up the standard in this respect, why don't you actually do something that makes us think we produce, you know, answers that actually think would better reflect transactions. Anything other than that to us becomes, I quote, very far away from narrow in scope. Because just so you know, IFRS 3 and this kind of thing, if you know, it's not one of those standards that you can just go in and surgically kind of strike and walk away. It effectively, you know, touches across the board, and I think we're very likely to get into then much more broadly accounting for acquisitions of assets. Why is that so different something to accounting for a business? What about deferred tax? What about transaction costs? So only to add in that there is the evidence side, but then there's the cost side that says, you know, maybe if we thought there was a quick, easy surgical solution there that we could, you know, process through the system and hopefully add clarity that would be very helpful and would take away if possible. At least based on our thinking so far, there isn't that quick, easy surgical solution.
Okay, Martin?
Yeah, thanks to you. Yeah, I guess no interpretation would help. If so, we would need to have standard setting, which is challenging and probably then also with the conflict with projects of the board. For me, the question is, what does consistent application mean? And I might raise the question whether the one or the other approach could probably better fit under specific situations. So consider you have a lot of instruments where you have a real fair value, so to say, quoted financial instruments in, probably the approach two fits better, whereas you have another a situation where you have more fair valued investment property or whatever in. So one could argue that probably also approach one is even better suitable than approach two. Anyhow, for me, if we write down to say the committee observed that an entity applies its reading of the requirements consistently to all such acquisitions, I might raise the question, what does it mean? Does it mean that I have to apply the same approach really for all acquisitions, or does it mean that if I have a comparable acquisition with regard to the consistency within the group of assets that I have to apply the same approach? That would mean something different for me, and I guess we should be clearer on that, because it could also be appropriate, for example, to apply either the one or the other and then disclose why this has been chosen. The second thing is just an editorial thing. I like more, to be honest, the headline business combination, acquisition of group of assets that does not constitute a business, because otherwise it is a little bit irritating. We are discussing something among IFRS 3 business combination. However, the group of assets per se does not qualify as a business combination, and I would be very clear about that already in the title, but that's probably my view. Yeah.
Just on your first point, Martin, while I sort of probably agree with you, I was going to say don't disagree, but I probably agree with you on a sort of philosophical level that perhaps it would make sense to take one approach in some circumstances and some in another. If with the agenda decision all we're doing is saying, you know, this is how you might read the words today, I think while I can see some people might read the words in different ways, I don't see anything in the literature that would suggest you're allowed to read the words in a different way depending on facts and circumstances. So I think based on the current literature, you sort of need to read the words and apply the words. You can't sort of say, and I think the accounting's better here, so I'll do this way and that way, even though it might be a sort of attractive. It's where sort of standard setting comes up, I think. Marie?
No. I take your point that it's important to have evidence, so okay, we work on that. As we said in a small letter, we think that there might be more diversity in practice coming because of the definition of business, and because now I think it's emphasis that there are two different views where some issuer maybe do not think of because there are more on one view. I think at least if nothing can be done because it's too difficult and you prefer to see the diversity before doing anything, it's important to clarify if it's an accounting policy choice and the consequences it has, and also the notion of disclosure, so that, I mean, eventually when we look at it again, you will see the diversity a lot more.
Okay. Thank you. Bob?
I think that there, in the current standard, there are two legitimate views, and we see in practice both are being used. Now, normally I'm one that wants to reduce diversity in practice for reasons of comparability and creating a level playing field, but I do think you have to think about the cost and benefits. On the benefit side, I'm not sure comparability is the highest priority here. These are kind of one-off transactions. It's not like you need comparability in revenue recognition. And I do think that you're probably not misleading when you think about also with the disclosures. So I'm not sure the benefit of doing something here is that high. When I think about the cost, neither view that's in the agenda decision is perfect. We can all think of situations where it doesn't work, a subset of transactions where it doesn't work well. So I think that in order to make it perfect, we would need standard setting. And in standard setting, in order to make it perfect, we'd have to create a lot of complexity. So I do think it adds a lot of cost. So I tend to agree with the staff's analysis and don't think that this one is worth doing the standard setting on, although we do need to monitor it. On the agenda decision, just two kind of points. One, I thought about the issue that people have raised it around here about accounting policy choice, so I won't repeat that. But the other thing is, I think I would change the reason for not adding this from a materiality to a cost and benefit reason.
Andrew.
I'll start off by agreeing with Bonnie's comment. I was quite troubled when I read through the paper when there was an example where you record a cash balance at something that's different from the cash balance. And it seems to me that when you get an answer like that, then we really do need to pause and think about the quality of accounting that we're getting, if that's genuinely what the standard says. So that initially is quite troubling. The other part that is really quite relevant in the paper is that although it indicates that the overall adjustment would seem to be similar if you're using the fair value model, if you've got a cost model, then it's a bit different. And that then takes me into where we're headed with the change in the definition of business. Because what I'm seeing from the limited amount of outreach I've done so far is that the number of transactions which are currently accounted for as business combinations but will become asset group of asset purchases in some sectors and some locations is relatively high, and for those the asset measurement attribute is cost. And so there is an emerging issue there, and there is a question over whether there is something that we need to think about to preempt that. One other thing that's come up just talking to people is that, for example, in one jurisdiction, they say, yes, we recognize the two approaches. Almost everyone does approach two, with very few people in approach one, and we don't really like approach one very much. So there's a lack of discomfort there at a suggestion that you could have an accounting policy choice. So I think that where I end up is I would be very much in favour of looking and seeing if a narrow scope amendment could be made. And by that, I'm really looking at it in the context of, can we, with something surgical, make the accounting better? I'm not talking about making the accounting perfect, just better than where we are at the moment. So that in the context of the larger number of transactions that we are expecting, on top of the ones that we already know about, and I've had one or two people saying, we've got this in our jurisdiction and it's actually quite pervasive, it's just that you don't see it. I really think that we need to be doing something here.
Thanks, Andrew. Can I just check one thing?
Sure.
So a couple of people, Katrina, have mentioned the fact that the cash isn't at its fair value. But you'd go to IFRS 9, which would then tell you to use the fair value, right?
Yes, yeah, so sorry, just to clarify there, what the example that we've spelled out in the paper illustrates is not that you would not recognise the cash at its fair value. In our example, it's 30,000. It's the fact that in recognising it at fair value in a particular scenario, you may end up recognising a day one gain or loss, which I think is the counterintuitive part.
That was really what I meant.
Yeah, no, exactly. And I thought it was both what you and Bonnie were saying.
And in a sense, IFRS 9 polices the appropriateness of the recognition of that gain or loss by telling you what the criteria are for when you can and can't do that.
Yeah.
Bertrand.
Just to echo Bob's comments on the fact that eventually if we were to decide to finalise the agenda decision, I would effectively favour justifying the fact that we'd go for an agenda decision on a cost-benefit approach rather than the materiality or whatever.
Now, I warned the board members that I'd give them the opportunity to see if they wanted to say anything, and this is partly in the interest of reducing the amount of flip-flopping that we might experience between us and the board. So if either of you had any observations that you thought might be relevant before I ask the committee to vote on whether or not they want to proceed with an agenda decision or do something different, do you have any observations, Gary?
I have a few. Thank you. I think this is perhaps a little bit more generally on process than outcome. I mean, one of the methods of operating the board these days, we want evidence-based decision-making, whether it's the start research, to draw a conclusion, to finalize standard, or so on. Right now, and I think most of the people around the room here tended to agree, there really was not a lot of evidence, new evidence that we found as a result of the comment letters and the other outreach we've done since then. And the reminding the committee we actually did put a proposal out in there consistent with what's proposed here was either way is a reasonable reading of it. No additional evidence and certainly no consequential additional evidence came through. I think with respect to the IFRS 3 changes that are coming, one is they haven't come yet, and they may give or could give, I think is the word in the document. Well, I think when they do give it, I think maybe we consider that the problem is bigger than now, but we don't know how many in terms of business combination of a business versus a group of assets, we actually don't know yet how much of a shift will occur, and I think we should wait till that. Again, back to this is not evidence, maybe it's a preemptive strike, but you don't necessarily know what problem you're preemptively striking on. I think the absence of disclosures out there, and I think one or more people said, well, it could be the disclosures aren't very good, but it could be interpreted the other way, and I think we shouldn't assume is that people are trying to do it right. And you get clean audit opinions and, you know, after the fact crises. So I think the fact there's not a lot of disclosures out there might imply that, yes, maybe there are a lot of these transactions, but in the aggregate, they're not that material, at least in terms of the P&L effect. I think, so I can actually very easily read, there's multiple ways, two ways anyways, to read this stuff. So I fully support where the staff came out. If pressed, I would pick alternative two, because when you're buying and selling gains and buying and selling companies, gains and losses one seem counterintuitive. A willing buyer, willing seller, neither under duress. So presumably it is a fair value for fair value exchange, regardless of the mix of the assets go in which direction. That doesn't feel like a gain instance, but I can tell you, gains and losses on buying and selling companies, whether a business or just a pile, they're not very high up in the hierarchy of quality of earnings. So therefore, yes, at one level it's comparability, but in terms of analysis of earnings, they don't get a lot of traction. And lastly, I think, Sue, I mean, we're research priority challenged. We've got plenty of things we could work on. We know we can only work on a very small amount of them. You can read the pipelines, the other staff discussions, and so on. So in terms of, for something to make it to a short list from on a very big list, there's got to be compelling reasons that there's a significant problem in there, and this just doesn't feel like it does. Okay.
Mary, anything to add?
I think I'll give some context comments. I'm personally very sympathetic to the analysis that says, look, we've got a clear source of diversity when we say it can be read two ways. Don't we want to fix that? You know, in Bonnie's kind of comments that you made when you reflect on the number of comment letters. But once I stand back and challenge myself about that, I remember how much, you know, increasingly the board is getting encouraged, chastised, told, warned, whatever you want, to think about the cost of change and to think about how we manage putting change through so that it isn't a continuous drip feed and how that is proving costly to the system. Now, and that makes me go back to the point about evidence a bit more. I would love to get out in front of it and solve it and not have, you know, from a preparer perspective, not be challenged by auditor or regulator. From an auditor perspective, not having, you know, to face signing off on different approaches. From, you know, a user perspective, wondering if it was a problem and if the disclosure is missing, or if that was, you know, if it wasn't a problem. But I think we've got to think hard about change and how we manage change and how we batch changes. So I think. I guess both Bertrand and Reinhardt said, you know, maybe wait and monitor and see before moving ahead, and maybe look to see if there's, I'm adding on to your point about if there's any anything else that this should be linked with rather than trying to just go after this piece. I think it is, somebody said, not sure that we're doing anything to address diversity if we're saying that there are two ways to do it, and I think the point that maybe gets skipped is there's maybe a greater variety than two ways that people were trying to read it, and this is, I think, saying not just you can read it in these two ways, but I think the committee thought it was these are the only two ways that you can read it. So, I mean, I've been punished enough about the change and change management thing that it makes me want to offer that advice elsewhere because I see its validity.
Thank you. So please take that board input in the spirit in which it's intended. Obviously, you are free to vote as very senior people with your own perspectives in terms of what you think the right decision is from a committee perspective, but I've been given pretty clear instructions. I also need to watch the interaction between the board and the committee, so I think it's helped to have at least a view of
a couple of board members to think about when you were voting. Bonnie?
Just maybe a question. I sensed you're about to get into the voting, so maybe just a question before we do that. If we decide to continue with the proposal not to add it and not to do any standard setting, is there a formalized way for us or the board to ask for a strict monitoring of this to see if it does become something more significant with the change in IFRS 3 and the definition of a business? Or what? How could that be done? I may be accepting the inevitable here.
And it's a good question, I think. I mean, there's a couple of things, and maybe we just... So I'm kind of thinking a bit on my feet, I'm throwing out a proposal as well as that. Bonnie, I don't know if you remember, but earlier this year, we kind of brought back to you as a committee a paper that talked about, you know, what were all the list of issues that, where it was kind of identified it could be a problem or it might be, and what had happened to them, and was there anything on that list, you know, that wasn't now being picked up by the board or somewhere else. And I think that this maybe would naturally potentially fall into that. Rather than just, you know, and we'll work out the right time. I mean, it could also be that we have, I'm looking where Craig is, behind the scenes, we keep a little potential monitor list. One thing that I'll mention that didn't come through here, but I know is kind of on the board's monitor list, for example, is cryptocurrencies. That's something that we talked about at an ASAP meeting that's on the board's monitor list. Mm-hmm. This could be something that, for example, we add to a kind of board stroke committee monitor list.
I think we could put it on a formal list like that and sort of almost diarise that X point in time after the effective date of the changed amendments to IFRS 3, we actually proactively seek some feedback in terms of whether this has become a bigger deal or not and formally report back to the committee at that point in time. I think that might be a sensible approach to
If it doesn't come up naturally before then. Because I respect the cost-benefit discussion because there are, you know, there's limited time and there are bigger things that may need to be addressed, but I do think that approach one doesn't make sense, and I respect the kind of, you know, desire for lack of, you know, desire for comparability, but...
Okay, thanks, Bonnie. That's a good question, mm-hmm. I think. So with that as background, we'll move now to the question for the committee. So... does the committee agree with the staff's recommendation to finalise the agenda decision that's attached to the appendix?
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8.
Just. And we'll take the step of putting a specific date that we will then monitor.
And do we record separately an update the point about, you know, outside of the agenda decision, that point as well.
Yeah, I think we can ensure that that is...
Just capture that in the update as well.
So capture it and update, and obviously then officially report it back to the board as well.
Yeah, I was going to say, report back to the board as well.
So I'll make sure that we... Jennifer. I'll make sure that we also... I will let the board know that it was sort of a toughish call for the committee in terms of a number of people being uncomfortable with the consequences, particularly of the approach one, and that we had sort of agreed that it would make sense to think about whether there's potential growth in the problem when we change the definition of the amendments to the definition of this.
So I wasn't sure if you were going to additionally ask for any other, you know, changes to the agenda decision, and some people already brought this up in the discussion, but maybe back on the point about disclosures, kind of picking up on Sandy's point that we don't see disclosures. Is it possible, and I admit I haven't given a lot of thought to this, is it possible maybe just to remind people what the existing disclosures are? I was quickly looking at IFRS 3, but maybe it's not here because it's an acquisition of an asset, but or a group of assets. Is there something we could do to remind preparers what the disclosure requirements are to help, just to remind people that if it is material, it should be disclosed?
So we looked at that. I'm not sure any of those in IFRS 3 apply because those all seem to be for the business combination, not asset acquisition.
Right.
But we thought about IS1, and we've often referred back to that and about the use of, I think it's 122, and use of judgments and how it affects the amounts.
Yeah. So even if it's general, maybe something to point people to the fact that, you know, you always have to think about the disclosure.
So I note that potentially we might put in a disclosure reference to the IS1 requirement. Also, and just to make sure you're all happy with that, is that we potentially will tweak that words of that last sentence in the second last paragraph, the one that talks about the committee observed an entity applies its reading of the requirements consistently to all such acquisitions, something as simple as saying maybe consistently to all acquisitions of a group of assets. Because I think, as Sue said, in this case, we're talking about how you read the requirements. And so I think there isn't really, in terms of the words, an option in there to decide to read the requirements one way in one situation and another way in another. And the one other piece, and it's just to test, at the minute, the agenda decision in the last paragraph based the committee's conclusion only on evidence. Somebody suggested, and I can't remember who, whether would it be better to make that reason more a cost-benefit? And if so, we can suggest just a change in that last paragraph of things and a bit more of both sides, not just the evidence benefit side, but also the cost side.
In terms of this monitoring point, do you think it warrants being actually elevated to being recorded in the agenda decision, or are you just thinking it would go on update?
I think we were thinking it would go in update, but not be within the agenda decision. So almost, you know, at the end of the agenda decision, like we've sometimes had before,
separate
but wouldn't necessarily, you know, kind of go through and appear in the green, because it's almost like a recording of something at a point in time.
All right, thank you.